Join me, Professor RPG, as I sit down with friends, colleagues, and special guests as we reminisce and discuss role-playing games that left their mark on us. Expect to see all sorts, from Western style to Japanese and even tabletop. So stay a while and listen, and let us trigger those memories of tales long since completed. Relive that fantasy you hold dear, and come along with us, adventurer, on this quest into the past. Welcome to the RPG University. Class is in session, and today I have a glimmer of a good idea. As always, I'm your host, Scott White, also known as Professor RPG, and this week I have the pleasure of welcoming back to the university niche RPG expert and games writer Lucas White to talk to me about the brand new saga Emerald Beyond that just released or is just releasing at the time of this recording, and in general, what's up with the saga series as a whole. So, Lucas, welcome back. How's it going, dude?
It's going great. It's been a while, so
I know. Awesome to be back. It's been a minute. We only saw each other like a month and a half ago, but it's been a while since you've been on the show. So good to have you back. But how you been?
Good. I think I'm going to steal niche RPG expert from you.
That's, hell yeah.
I don't know why I haven't used that before, but that felt good.
I mean, you love all the more niche games. I came to you during Emerald during our shared Emerald Beyond reviewing during our playthroughs of that. So, but yeah, we are here to talk a bit about the brand new Saga game that is coming out this week. Is it releasing Thursday or Friday?
Let's see. What is today's Wednesday, right?
Today's the 24th at time of recording.
Yeah, so 25th is when the game launches.
Okay, so this Emerald Beyond is out when you are listening to this, everybody. Embargo lifted a few hours ago, earlier this morning at time of recording. But yeah, a brand new Saga game released today. And we both had a chance to review it for different services or different websites. So before we dive into Emerald Beyond itself, just a quick look back at one of the big, I feel like one of the defining releases of the Saga series, and that was a game that we didn't get initially for actually a very long time, and that is Romancing Saga, the first one for Super Famicom that released back on January 28th, 1992 in Japan. Japan would then go on to get a remake on WonderSwan Color in December of 2001. And really, our first taste of Romancing Saga was the PlayStation 2 version that released on October 11th, 2005. We would eventually get a kind of redone Pixels port remake, I guess, in December of 2022. But yeah, some other games that released the same year that the original Super Famicom released. It was a very packed RPG year, which included Final Fantasy V, Dragon Quest V, the original Shin Megami Tensei, Shining Soul, Soul Blazer, and then we also had some other standouts like Mortal Kombat, Bucky O'Hare, and Mega Man 5. So some monolithic RPGs this year that we would eventually go on to get as well. But what are some of those RPGs that you've played or enjoy before we dive into Saga, Lucas?
Oh, just the ones on that list? Man, I'm sitting here thinking, I can't believe all of that came out on the same year.
Yeah.
That's wild. It's funny, stacked, too, because with Final Fantasy V and Dragon Quest V were also games that didn't get localized forever. So it's kind of interesting that, and Shin Megami Tensei, it's like an all-star list of games that we wouldn't see, you know, officially until way, way down the line.
And I mean, even the original SMT, we only got an iOS port of it. We haven't gotten like a legit version of it.
And
even
iOS
in 2024,
you can't even play that now.
Yeah.
Which is just wild.
It's a crazy time, but lots of good fan translations of that game. The classes SMT and the Mega 10 games. So,
and I want to say like Final Fantasy V is what, like the, like original kind of big deal fan translation.
Oh yeah.
Like in general.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a lot of good old butts. A lot of history in one year.
It was wild. Jeez. But we are here to talk about Saga and specifically Emerald Beyond. So Lucas, Emerald Beyond, brand new Saga game released. What's kind of your history, your background with the Saga franchise?
Yeah, so as far as I can remember, I played one of the original games back when they were called Final Fantasy Legend on the Game Boy. I don't remember which one. I was a child. But I remember it just being really hard to understand, like, what in the world was going on. And it was like a friend's copy. I never had my own. But it was one of those things that, like, it was so weird it stuck with me in terms of, like, I'd be like, oh, yeah, that game that was, like, you know, eating meat from monsters when you defeat them. And then, like, your party changes arbitrarily. Very, very weird stuff. Over the years, I then think I kind of would, like, dabble in Saga games occasionally. Like, I didn't really have, like, a PlayStation when it was relevant. But I would poke at them in emulators and stuff and never really attached to them until way later. I'm going to try not to, like, spend too much time on here, but, like, when I was in high school, I started to really kind of get disillusioned by, like, Final Fantasy and stuff.
Around what Final Fantasy is that? Would that have been?
I want to say, like, things started to turn me off a bit when 10 came out. And then I think 12 was the one that hit when I was in high school. And I was just like, this isn't for me. I'm out. Which led directly to me discovering things like Shin Megami Tensei and Disgaea and, like, other RPGs besides, like, you know, the obvious ones. So I think that kind of... I would eventually circle back around to liking Final Fantasy, but I think that really set me up for having a more open mind. And then I want to say just to maybe like 2017, 2018, I started watching a lot of like the stuff Jeremy Parrish was putting on YouTube, like his Game Boy works and stuff. And he had an episode on Final Fantasy Legend and just like the stuff he was saying about it, like the way he presented the game just like kind of clicked with me. And then I went and played it like for real. And it clicked. I don't know what it was, but just the time, like I have an office job where I'm just sitting there watching YouTube all day. So maybe it was like a weak point in my brain, you know, in terms of like being stimulated, whatever it was, like it really clicked with me. And I was just like, oh, I actually like this. I'm like thinking about it in a different way than I was before. And then it just kind of snowballed from there. I was like, oh, I like this game. I should just try the other ones. And there's just something about like the reputation of the series for being weird, plus the sort of novelty of having something like click with me after a long time. Something about it. And I just like, now I'm like all in. And then I kind of like made it almost like a gimmick professionally, where it's like, I'm just going to make as much noise as I can about the series now that I'm like into it. And now here we are.
Sounds like me with the Trails series.
Yeah. Yeah.
So Emerald Beyond, I remember I dabbled in and I reviewed and played the collection of Saga that came out. So the Final Fantasy Adventure games back when that released a couple years ago. And that was like, up until Emerald Beyond, that was my really only experience with the Saga series. Over an RPG site, at the start of the year, I did a gaming resolution for the year ahead, and one of those things was to finally get into the Saga games. So Emerald Beyond was my game where I jumped in, because I feel like Saga games now are, well, the original Final Fantasy Adventure ones, or Final Fantasy Legend, excuse me, had some stuff to it, like, it's evolved and become, it's like such a different beast now. And I talked to you, it was rough getting into it. Like my mindset was so not Emerald Beyond was so not what I was expecting or like what Saga was expecting. But before I get into all that, what kind of give the listeners, what did you think of Emerald Beyond as a kind of a diehard Saga fan now? What do you think of Emerald Beyond?
Yeah, so I actually took way more time than I expected to like settle on something, which is weird to say since I ended up giving it a 9 officially. because there it's a really interesting game even as part of the Saga series. And I use interesting in that kind of broad, like positive and negative kind of way.
Mm-hmm.
If you've only played Saga up to a certain point and then you play this, even then I think it'll be really kind of like weird and hard to get used to. Because like if you didn't play the one right before this, where a lot of like the specific aspects of it really started to take shape, it's still pretty different from older games, like in the way it looks and the way it like plays in that like physical sense.
Mm-hmm.
So it's weird because like I really want to say on like an intuitive level, like yes, it's a Saga game that you can start with. And I kind of had to contend with that question writing the review. I was like, what does that even mean with a series that has such a like powerful reputation for being weird and unapproachable mm-hmm. in the first place? All it is to say is like it's a very deliberately structured kind of game that is really hard to compare to other things.
It's
I
was so not especially the tone of this game really
threw me. At the same time, if you look
at
it more deeply, it lines up with the rest of the series in other ways. So it's just very, very jarring, I think, for better and for worse.
You cut out there for a minute.
Oh, okay.
So just what was that last point?
Yeah, I was saying like, so in the context of Saga as a series, it both feels really different and like lines up historically. But I think like ultimately it's like a really jarring game to like jump into. And I think for better and for worse in a lot of ways.
Yeah, as someone jumping into this series for the first time here, I bounced so hard off of it at the beginning. Like I was expecting a much more kind of serious approach. Like the writing really threw me off. Like I was not anticipating the more lighthearted, I don't want to say slapstick, but the more,
it's very silly.
Silly.
It's not afraid to be silly.
The writing can be like all over the place with random things, and I was like, is this just a poor localization? Is this just really weird approach? Like, I wasn't sure. Like, so I talked to you. I talked to some other friends who I know are big into Saga games, and I was like, because you were saying you were really enjoying this, and others were. And it's like, from a fresh perspective, I was so looking at it from a different angle than what I think I should have been looking at it and expecting. So talking to you and hearing, oh no, that's just kind of how these games are, help level set and like adjust my expectation scales. And once I realized that, no, Saga games aren't necessarily as melodramatic or whatnot as like a Final Fantasy or as serious or whatnot, or cohesive even as a Mana or a Final Fantasy, it helped me take a breath, and it's like, okay, I'm just gonna, what it is what it is, from a story perspective. And from that point, like, it definitely helped my approach. So I think coming into it expecting a more traditional Square Enix experience, you will not find that here, I think.
Absolutely not, yeah. A lot of sort of like the, I don't know, narrative through line is like, at least the way I see it. So if you look at like your average Wikipedia article or whatever, you'll see a lot of stuff around the era of when the series started of like developers trying to adapt tabletop RPGs into something that fits like a console game, right? And, mm-hmm. and that's kind of, you kind of end up with like Dragon Quest and the original Final Fantasy. And these are games that come out kind of like while the rules are still being written, right?
Yeah.
And you get Final Fantasy II, which Kawazu was the combat designer for. And that game is infamous for having really weird combat and progression mechanics. For whatever reason, he leaves Final Fantasy, but immediately is like, hey, we want to try to make a RPG on the Game Boy, which is like unheard of at the time. We're going to give it to you. And he just kind of like takes these ideas of like tabletop RPGs having so many like weird and like I don't know, very minutia driven progression mm-hmm. systems. Like if you're playing D&D, so much stuff can happen when you're like leveling up that just doesn't map on to like what other developers end up with, where it's like, oh, you just get your EXP, level up, you get your skills, blah blah blah. And so it's almost like a different path. And I feel like because Kawazu has just been at Square Enix for 40 years and has been in charge of the series for 40 years, he's just kind of been able to take like, well, I tried this other weird thing and it seemed to work because that game did really well in Japan at the time, and just goes from there. And he's always just been like iterating. And I think that's kind of how you end up where it is now, where it's just like completely unafraid to be weird and different compared to anything else that like Square Enix is putting out.
So he's been on since the very original one, or one of the early games, right?
Oh yeah, he's been the director of Saga the entire time.
Okay.
I think Saga 3, he was not. I think he was like working on something else at the time. But they remade 2 and 3 for the DS, and he came back and like totally changed how that game worked anyways, which is kind of funny. Yeah. He was also the director on Final Fantasy 12, who was kind of brought in to like finish that game when the original director left.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. And he's done other things. He's like been a big wig at Square Enix forever, but it's like Saga's kind of been his baby the whole time. It's really fascinating because like you don't see that, especially in RPGs, like ever.
Yeah. So is he the person I have to thank for creating the Gambit system? Is he the one I have to profess my love to?
I don't believe so. I think he really came in like to basically see the project through to the end.
Oh, okay.
I'm not super well read on the drama there that happened with 12, but my understanding is that he was just kind of like, oh, things went bad with the director we have, we need to bring someone in to like make sure this gets out the door, kind of thing.
Okay. So you mentioned you were kind of conflicted a lot, where you were conflicted and you took a lot of time before you settled on your 9 out of 10. What were some of those conflicting points for you that really gave you pause during your deliberation?
So for a little bit of background on that, with this game and the one right before it, Scarlet Grace, they really took that tabletop thing to like a logical extreme. And if you just look at screenshots or whatever, like it looks like a board game almost, where it's like your character is a 3D model, but you're kind of running around on this like 2.5 plane, and all the buildings are almost like little pop-up book flippy doos. And they kind of did that to sort of like pull back on the almost like movie style that games like Final Fantasy have, where it's like more about going through a story and kind of going from plot point to plot point, so on and so forth. They're kind of thinking of it more in like terms of encounters, like you're on an adventure, you're poking at the different spots, and who knows what's going to happen, you know, you're kind of up to the mercy of the DM, kind of thing. And it's definitely a choice that I think has led to some confusion and some like kind of uneven territory. Some things worked, some didn't. In Scarlet Grace, they had this system where you have your equipment and your items and stuff, and your equipment can be upgraded. And to do that, you would take the items you get from doing battles, you would go to a town, and then like the merchant there could like trade like your drops for your upgrades. In this game, they really like wanted to streamline, because I think they were reacting to things being a little too open in the previous game. I feel like players kind of would get confused, and like sometimes you would just go from location to location trying to like trigger the next event, and it was all kind of wishy-washy. And so here they're like, you go where you're supposed to go, and we might give you some like branching paths, but there's no nothing's really left up to your imagination. Like they call it what, like the emerald waves or the emerald paths or something.
Yeah,
like
everything is very telegraphed. It's like, okay, go to this little gem spot that we point you to. This is a grinding spot, or this is a story spot to progress. Yeah, very exactly. Telegraphed.
So like your combat spaces are really just like, it's one space you can go to fight and grind. So that kind of messes the whole like item drop thing up. So what they do instead is this trading mechanism.
Yeah, that was confusing. Like, is it all random, like what you get, or is there a way to like specifically look for XYZ? Do you know?
So I'm not convinced it's 100% random. I feel like the real sickos and like the data miners out there will like find the math eventually. But it's really hard to deal with, you know, playing it when there's no resources out, because it's like, basically, it's like, here's two slots and you can put two of your items in. Then you go to a battle or you go to a different location and come back, and you'll get like a list of items that you can trade. And it feels really random. And then there's like a secondary menu where it's like, okay, well, if the stuff you put in and you're getting back isn't good, there's also another list of random things that you can trade for. And here's like what they want. And I feel like 80-75% of the time it's like stuff you just don't have what they want for it.
Yeah, or trading one crystal for a different type of crystal. Yeah, or spirit gems for random pieces of wonky gear. Yeah, it's
exactly. And so it makes all of your upgrades just feel like you have no control over it. And that's like one of the main ways to like get stronger, aside from like sitting and grinding in battles forever. And I was really struggling with this because, A, it's just like there's a lot of randomness in these games, but usually it's in like a greater context that you can kind of exert some control over. Here, just in this specific part, it's like, just you don't feel that control. And on top of that, like, there can be these huge difficulty spikes. And it got to this point where I was at the, what I was pretty sure was the final boss in one of the routes, and I just couldn't even like stand a chance. It was like bad. And my choice was to like, okay, I can sit here in this one combat room and just grind that forever and then come back and hope I did enough numbers to get through this, or I can just start over and try another route. And that's a thing that can happen in older Saga games and for like different reasons, but like a lot of the remasters give you this sort of like, not quite new game plus, but like, oh, we understand that you're probably like in a spot you don't like, so you can start over and bring your stuff over. Like, it is a new game plus, but not quite. That's not here at all. So I'm kind of just sitting there like, man, I'm like backed into a corner. I don't like how this feels. But I don't really want to start over without bringing my stuff over, at least what I have. But yeah, I had to make a choice because I'm reviewing the game. And I basically had to sit there and like measure that in terms of like, how do I feel this weighs in? You know, if I was playing the game without a deadline, how would I react to this? That kind of thing. And that was kind of like my biggest point of consternation, was just like, I don't think. Like, I saw what they were kind of doing with putting more guardrails up, but I think it backfired in those ways, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, a lot. And I had to say, I found the tips and glossary menu to be almost entirely useless in this game. I thought it was hard to navigate and find like exactly what you're looking for. And when you did find what you're looking for, it really didn't provide any really good information. Like the trading, it's like, put up an item and then you can trade. It's like, I know that just from doing it. Like, this doesn't help at all. And especially, like, for the longest time, I was like, is there a shop? Like, is this my method to get new gear? Is it just this trading aspect, or will I eventually come to a shop that I can buy things from? Is it just this trading and then enhancement? Like, how's that work? And then I realized it's like, nope, this is just what it is. And
that's it.
And then, like you said, it's sometimes I could trade, but it's for an item I had never heard of or encountered.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, am I supposed to have this? Was I supposed to have found this somewhere? Is it a random drop? Probably one of the most annoying things about, like, for me, was the lack of a bestiary or an ability to scan enemies. Just because there's so many different types of attack. There's like piercing, there's slashing, there's elements, and you have things that mention deals more weakened or damage to the weak, or no, it was Mr. S's trials. It's like, hit an enemy with their weakness without a way to find out what the hell an enemy's weakness is. I still don't know, unless it's just random. I've eventually figured out that, like, blue lumbers or something were criticals. I don't know. But it's like, there's no way to find out any of that. Like, give me a scan ability or a bestiary. That still annoys me so much.
Yeah, like, honestly, if it wasn't for the fact that there's like so much other interesting stuff going on in the combat system, I think that would have impacted me more. But I was able to kind of like not even worry about it for the most part.
Yeah. I love the combat. Like, legit, it's the combat is so good. So I ended up giving this a 7 out of 10. Just there's a lot of wonkiness and like a lack of polish and like refinement that I think it could use, but the combat was so good. Like, I am a big proponent of just grinding catharsis in RPGs, where I can just kind of turn my brain off, just grind for hours. And in this, you have those never ending, endless grind spots in each of the worlds you visit. And it's like, and the combat's fun. It's like, I love this. It's very good. The timing and triggering combos and having your counters interact and like slot themselves in to break up other enemies' combos. It's so, so good.
It really is. Like, it's
stellar.
Understated how cool it is. Like, I'm pretty sure. Yeah. So they brought in a new combat designer to kind of lead it. I have an interview that went up on Shack News with some of the leadership behind the game. And the most interesting responses I got were from that guy. Like, he is thinking about things that, you know, I don't think anyone else would. And I think you can tell just in the amount of, like, depth that system has. It's so fun to play around with. It's hard to understand at first. Really, it's a lot to wrap your head around, but it's cool.
I felt like that was the entirety of the game, but that was the only thing that, like, really clicked. It's like, okay, I figured it out. It's like, oh, okay, this is how counters work, or this is how chains, or like the chain tag. I'm still not 100% what Quell does, like what Quell attacks do.
Than stun. You know how when you're doing one of those things that's like a counter or a pursuit or whatever, and the enemy will have like question marks on it? Quell cancels those. So, like, if you have someone with a gun weapon, their main purpose is going to be like stuffing those so you can kind of work your way around them.
Oh, so Quell stops the counters. Get it.
Unless it's a counter that's specifically designed to fight piercing damage, which I think overpowers the Quell, as I've found to my dismay a few times.
So briefly touching, just going back, because this is about guns and kind of being overpowered, whatnot, mm-hmm. but then also in terms of the difficulty, weird balancing and enhancing weapons, I randomly, like on the third or fourth world of my playthrough with Dismal King Sagunas or whatever, mm-hmm. I managed to create the strongest gun weapon, like in a chain. It was like true Pompadour or whatever. That's and awesome. I gave it to my... to Warrior, who my wife Becky described as he looks like Cisco meets MIB, like the Men in Black. He's just this black dude who rhymes with hot pink hair and wears sunglasses.
Incredible.
And she also describes the Dismal King as David Bowie.
Nice, nice.
But yeah, he was just wrecking stuff, like countering things for like 400 damage. And it's like, okay, you do you, boo.
That's so cool.
But I could not tell you how I got all those materials. It's like, okay, well, I just can keep enhancing this gun. Go for it. And okay, sure.
Yeah, in Scarlet Grace, you kind of like... would often have access to multiple combat spaces mm-hmm. and they would kind of like tell you like, here's what you'd get from the drops for fighting these battles. And then it would be like, and here's some extra like bonus objectives for other mm-hmm. drops. So it was easier to have like a spread of things to look for and kind of be able to better keep track of what you're looking for. And here it just like in trying to make it simpler, I think they accidentally made it harder to deal with.
And I don't think it would be as bad if they just had better documentation too.
Yeah.
Of how the systems are kind of working together and
mm-hmm.
really can how you can take advantage of it without and yeah, like you said, probably in the next couple weeks once this game is out or at the time of recording it's out, but a game FAQs or Wikipedias, there'll be deep dives and data miners.
Yeah.
But at least for reviewers, it's like, okay, I think this is how this works.
And like historically, like that's kind of part of the fun of these games for mm-hmm. people that like them is like there's always a whole bunch of systems. And especially like in the earlier games, like the game would not explain how anything worked at all. And you would kind of have to figure things out. And a lot of it was in service to like building your characters.
Mm-hmm.
It's like in the very first game, it's like if you had a human, you would have to basically feed them drugs to make their stats go up. If you had a mutant or an Esper, depending on the translation, their stats would go up randomly, but then they'd also like learn spells randomly and you'd kind of have to like figure that out. Mm-hmm. And then it was like, you have a monster and you feed them parts of other monsters and they'll transform. And it was all kind of part of this like, okay, this is overwhelming and confusing at first, but if you kind of like sit there and play with it and pay attention to what's happening, you eventually kind of get a better understanding, and then that can lead to just having some really powerful characters that you get to kind mm-hmm. of like mold yourself piece by piece. And I think like the satisfaction at the end of that feels really good.
Yeah.
But here you get a lot of that with like the characters and the combat. So when it comes to some of the other stuff, it's just like too much.
Mm-hmm. And yeah. I do really appreciate just the amount of flexibility and optimization and customization you can take with your mm-hmm. party with all the various skills and not necessarily locking behind a weapon type
yeah.
behind a specific character. Really, really like it. One question I have though, that I was never really able to figure out. How do you learn new spells?
It varies.
Is it a glimmer thing?
I believe so. For like certain characters, like getting new spells is almost like a plot thing.
Okay.
But then like other characters, it's glimmer based. And then like some of it can be like related to, the roles you can find or like it the mechanics on spells are very wishy-washy and all over the place.
Okay. I'm glad I wasn't just like stupid and not able to figure it out. Okay.
Yeah. It can take a while, especially because like spells themselves take a while to use. So it's, mm-hmm. Yeah. I honestly, like, I found a lot more success just sticking with weapons for the most part. Yeah. But that'll be, like, another thing that, now that the pressure's off for me to, like, get through when I'm playing quickly, I can kind of dive more into that part of it.
Speaking of diving kind of back into it, now that the review is out, what's your first go-to that you plan on diving back into? Or is it a story you want to finish or a story you want to revisit? Because this is a game that rewards and kind of incentivizes multiple playthroughs. What are you going to be diving into with your newfound freedom?
I definitely just want to, like, go through with each main character. I think that's one of the biggest strengths of this game, is, like, each protagonist has their own, like, gimmick, their own scenario. Like, every, like, it's not like some games where it's like, oh, you get to pick your character, but then you kind of go down, like, a similar path. This one is like the whole premise is different, and, like, really fun and weird and strange ways. And then the way it's kind of been presented by the devs is, like, you may end up going to the same locations. But if it's, like, your second or third or fourth run on your save, like, the entire way a story can play out would be different. And so I just really diving into, like, all those different, like, modifiers and variables without the time pressure, I think is what I'm looking forward to.
That'll be cool. I just want to do more combat. I just want to fight some.
Definitely.
That's what I want to do. And really, we'll figure out more of the things I'm missing, and, like, with monsters and robots, really dive into them as well.
Yeah, and there's so many, like, recruitable characters that the game, I think, is really coy about being like, can you recruit them? Can't you? When can you? What choices do you have to make? So that'll be fun too, just to figure out, like, some of these guys. Like, I started the game with Bonnie and Formina.
Okay.
And there's a part where you go through this, like, pirate scenario. And there's a character who's kind of with you the whole time. And I was like, oh, I'm sure this guy will join my party by the end of this. And he never did. And then, like, I saw screenshots in the press portal of him being in combat. And I was like, oh, I want this guy. Like, did I miss him? Is it like I have to come back to get him? You know, there's so much of that in this game.
Yeah, and there's, like, branching conversation paths you can do, and, like, a rewind feature. It's it is cool, and it is an interesting incentive to revisit things on top of just general things change from one playthrough to the other, which is cool.
Yeah, a lot of saga games, especially once they started getting more complicated, are very much about, like, making each playthrough different. And some ways are a little meaner than others. Like the first Romancing Saga is pretty famous for just hiding the fact that the longer you play, the more things you'll probably miss. but, like, there's a lot of that throughout the series of, like, you never know what kind of, like, flags you're tripping on and off in the background while you play. Which is really fun.
And I think that's one of those defining features of, like, saga fans, that if you're a fan of it, you will, like, oh yes, I love getting more of this. But coming from, like, I think Emerald Beyond is a very hard introductory game for saga. Like, as, like, unless you kind of know what you're getting yourself into, I think it can be rough and turn people off. There's a lot about it, but I think when you do level set those expectations and have a better idea of what you're getting into and know it ahead of time, much better time. That's how it was for me. Like,
yeah, for sure. I think it's weird in a lot of ways. But I think it's friendlier in similar ways, because it isn't just, like, cutting you off from things. It's not secretly making the game harder in ways that some of the older games do. Like, for as many, like, parts of it that don't make a lot of sense, I think just in terms of, like, here's the game, here's your characters, you just follow, you know, kind of the thing, and then I'll go through and you'll see the end. I think is more straightforward in this one.
Yeah.
But you still have to kind of buy into how strange things are at the beginning, like you said.
It's a divisive series is what I kept hearing. It's a divisive series. Is what I just kept hearing over and over again. After playing this, I really want to see what a only for console saga game or only for console and PC saga game would be. I feel like it was kind of stifled with having to also be on iOS and Android. What did you think?
Maybe. I think when you look at kind of the structure and the way they kind of talk about making it like a board game and stuff, it's hard to tell like what part of that is like really the intent versus part of it being like platform restrictions and whatnot. Because like to your point, yeah, it's got like the really big buttons and everything, so it's like, yeah, this is for mobile. And like the game before this was, I think, also on mobile.
It was on Vita, I know. I think it was originally a Vita title, Scarlet Grays.
Yeah, so it's like maybe. And while like the games are successful in Japan, you know, there's not as successful here, so I'm sure the budget is very small to begin with. So they're kind of like trying to work around those limitations for sure. But like even when you go back to like the PS1 games, like they still kind of have similar quirks, I guess you could say.
Yeah. For me, it's not even about the big buttons. It was more like how in combat or like at the post game or the post combat, like little spiels, like character mouths don't move, or how moving around the board, everything feels like you're skating around on glass. Like there's a disconnect in like feeling grounded. I like the speed and stuff just didn't match up. Everything just felt floaty. And like there was some artifacting in like character portraits. There was little odds in like kind of that lack of like just that little polish that I wonder if is partly because like, okay, we had to use some different or some lower resolution assets because it was going to be viewed on a mobile device, or we opted to this way because it was going to be on a phone or a tablet. And it's just, those are the things that more I noticed. Not so much the buttons, even though after someone mentioned that, all I kept seeing was the giant buttons.
Yeah, I think the button thing is just more of like a telltale, like, oh yeah, okay, that's the UI you use on mobile.
But those little odds and ends were things that I wasn't expecting from a Square Enix game. Like, even Diofield Chronicles, like, had moving mouths when people were talking. And just, I really enjoyed Diofield Chronicles. That was just an example. But it just felt weird in some regard.
You can't fully tell how, like, you know, you say low budget as kind of a catch-all term, right? Because you kind of feel it, but like other points, it's like, yeah, there's like the character models aren't moving, and it's kind of got like the static visuals for like cutscenes and stuff. But then there's like full-on vocal soundtrack songs. And like, did you have a? You played the Dismal King route, so you had Dolores, right?
No, I did not get Dolores.
Oh my god! So you go to, I picked the guy with the hoodie, Mito, I think is his name, for my second route.
Okay.
And you actually go to like the Dismal King world, kind of pretty early on, and you run into Dolores. She's like this goth maid lady.
Yeah.
She's like, help me revive the Demon King, whatever. But there's a part where she like sings. And it's absolutely incredible.
Yeah, so you interact with her at the end, like in the final quote-unquote world, when she revives you as you play the Dismal King, but she doesn't join you.
Oh man.
And I don't, and yeah, didn't get that the scene or anything with it, Dolores. So
it's so good. When we talk about this game being silly, like there's parts mm-hmm. where it's just unhinged. But yeah, to your point, it's like, man, like usually you don't expect like full vocal tracks in games mm-hmm. that are low budget. But you know, it's hard to tell.
Yeah, and it's like I don't even think of it as low budget per se. It's more mm-hmm. just there's some rougher edges that I wasn't I was expecting a bit more polish from a Square Enix game. Mm-hmm. And like I know games these days, like games aren't cheap. And honestly, the fact that this is a mobile RPG blows me away. Like I don't play many mobile games. I've just never really been able to get into them. But mm-hmm. looking at this is like, I could play this on my phone, blows me away. Like that idea, that mobile games have gotten to this point, having grown up in a time where Snake on my Nokia cell mm-hmm. phone was the shit and the coolest thing ever, or being able to play like random ass games on my TI-86 calculator in high school to we have a full-fledged art, like, you could probably easily sink 100 hours into Emerald Beyond.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And it's a legit console experience RPG. Like as a mobile RPG, blows me away. But having played it, and I still to this day see Saga as a console RPG. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, like it. I appreciate what it's doing. Like I want to just smooth over a little of those edges, but shit, if I was playing this on my mobile, like my phone or something, I'd be like, this is so stupidly impressive. And I think that might just be me being out of touch with mobile games nowadays. But
I feel you though. Like I remember, gosh, it was must have been around 10 years ago at this point, before I had a smartphone, I had a Final Fantasy 1 and 2 on my like mm-hmm. whatever flip phone it was, and they were surprisingly competent ports of those games for a flip phone, right? Mm-hmm. But now like you look at what Square Enix puts out on I recently got a Retroid Pocket 4.
Oh, I got one too.
Oh man, you should absolutely just like get on the Play Store mm-hmm. and just look up Square Enix, and like there's so much stuff you can play on that, and it's like, man, like I can play, you know, an HD version of the Final Fantasy 3 and 4 remakes on this thing. Or I could play, you know, like Trials of Mana is on there, although I don't think it's compatible, but you know, all the Saga mm-hmm. games are on there. It's wild.
There's so much power in small packages now. It is stupid wild.
I mean, the Switch is basically a crappy old phone crammed into a bigger case.
It really is. It is really impressive, and I show my age when it's like, our cell phone games are like this now, man. Back in my day.
I mean, even now, it's like most mobile games you think of as like, you know, Fire Emblem Heroes or whatever, where you're just paying money for your little Skinner box spitting JPEGs at you. So it's almost doubly impressive when you have Square Enix putting real games out as well.
It's wild times, and who knows what, like, shit, 10 years from now, hell, even 5 years from now, it'll be PS5 quality.
Oh yeah, without a doubt.
And everything
more parody than ever.
Man, so having played a bunch of the Saga games, Lucas, what do you hope is kept from Emerald Beyond for future Saga games, and what would you be happy with them working on further or changing up for the next one?
Yeah, so I'm still kind of like two games in, working out how I feel about that kind of pop-up book thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like I see the intent behind it, and I understand it, and I think it's cool.
Mm-hmm.
But I still like the you know, I really like that Romancing Saga remake minstrel song, because it kind of, it still lets you like run around your towns and spaces like a traditional RPG, even though it doesn't have like a big world map for you to run around on or whatever. I like that. And of course I like the old 2D games because, I mean, those are exactly what you'd expect from a 2D console RPG. But I think they really need to like do another pass at the equipment system. I think if that was more like the, even just the previous game, that would have been a lot better.
I need to play Scarlet Grace. I've heard pretty much nothing but great things about Scarlet Grace.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's very similar in terms of like how it kind of looks, but then a lot of it is very different. And you know, speaking of Retroid Pocket, it's $9 right now on Google Play, so I may have triple dipped.
After you mentioned searching Square Enix on my Retroid Pocket, I was like, yeah, why not? And holy crap, there are a lot of games on here.
Oh yeah,
Dragon Quest. I think, don't you have like, isn't it like Dragon Quest pretty much 1 through 8 you can get on here?
Not quite. I don't think 7's on there. But otherwise, yeah. Although most of those are portrait and don't have controller support.
Okay.
But they're good, but otherwise.
Like Final Fantasy VIII Remastered. I honestly had no idea that was ported to like
PC. Oh, yeah.
Or not PC, but mobile devices.
Yeah, just about like everything that isn't like their big AAA games, you can play on mobile. It's wild.
It's so wild.
I guess to like, just to kind of answer your question a little more, I think the way they're kind of messing with combat is really cool. So I definitely like to see more of that. And I really, so like, a lot of Saga games will kind of tinker around with progression and stuff. One thing I really love is I like that they brought back all the different stats being part of it. Because sometimes they'll be like, well, maybe we'll just do skill levels to make it a little easier. Maybe we'll just do like your HP goes up, but then, you know, the strength and everything is tied to other things. Because I think a lot of people kind of react poorly to like, oh, well, I have to go in combat and then maybe like my defense will go up or whatever. I don't like that. But I actually really do like that. So I was happy to see that come back with Emerald. So really like everything tied to character progression, I think is my favorite part of these games. So more of that for sure. More of the,
I'm a sucker for stats, so I'm right there with you.
More glimmering. I really like that they added even more glimmering. So just for the listeners, like it used to be you would glimmer a skill based on your weapon usage or whatever. And that's like the whole light bulb thing. People love the light bulb thing. but they added the, I forget what it's called, but the light bulb changes red and you get like the same skill but slightly different.
The custom text for humans.
I thought that was really cool. That's a totally new thing.
Okay.
So yeah, just having additional layers to like getting that random skill pop is really fun.
I always love getting those skill pops during like long combo chains when they would just like appear.
Oh, like, man.
Yes, keep going.
It's so funny though that can happen and also really mess you up sometimes.
Yeah, delay an enemy or something.
Yeah, or like break your own combo. Like, it's really interesting the way they're like, here's all these cool rules and combo systems and things that you can do, but your enemies get all the same stuff, so have fun dealing with that. It's just like a really, really funny kind of like banana peel kind of thing that they like to do.
Yeah, it was a fun game once I had a better idea of what to expect with Emerald Beyond. And I'm definitely excited to dive in to more Saga games and really get more of a taste for the series and what people love about it. What would you recommend as a good next Saga game to play?
So I think more and more, when I look back, I think Minstrel Song Remastered is really good.
Okay.
If you play like the original Romancing Saga or even just the PS2 version of Minstrel Song, like there's stuff about it that I think will scare people away. Like, especially what I was talking about earlier with like events can just disappear if you don't get to them after a certain point in time. The remaster gives you the option to like slow the clock down a lot more. And it also has like a new game plus that I think helps you understand that it's okay to like miss things, because you can like come back in your next run and like I was able to kind of like reframe it as in like, oh no, I'm missing things, to like, well, maybe I'll like focus on this part this run, and then maybe on my next run I'll come back and do this other set of things. And it kind of it helped kind of make that transition a little easier to deal with. Because ultimately it's like there's the main story and you can't really miss the main story, and I didn't quite realize that at first. So like anything you can miss are like different side stories. And so just the remaster gives you like tools to keep track of that and tools to kind of help make transitioning to your next run smoother. And there's really a lot of stuff in that game that you can just really play with. And I think it does a good job communicating what it needs to communicate and hiding like the stuff that's fun to uncover. So I think that was really good. Cool. And I think like Romancing Saga 2 is also really good. Again, like the remaster of that. That was like, if you asked me what my favorite in the series would be, I think I would still say that one. Just because it's got like a really neat premise and like a lot of weird open world kind of, again, the like modular gameplay and things can go differently depending on how you interact with them and stuff. I think that's kind of like the purest Saga game in a way.
That's cool. Yeah. I'll have to give them a check out, both of them. I own both of them because I buy the games. I just don't necessarily play the games.
Right.
It's been a really busy year, few years, Lucas, of games releasing, especially RPGs. So
especially RPGs.
And it sounds like this, I think we have a bit of a lull the next month or so. So maybe I'll try and get some backlog goodness in, but.
Yeah, I would love a chance to actually finish Rebirth, because I had to shelf it. And it's just like, man, I would like to see the ending eventually.
It's a wild ride. Ride, to be sure. But no, I once again, I thank you for answering my question while we were playing through Saga about what's so great about it, like Emerald Beyond, like Saga in general, like what's the deal with Saga? And really coming on and nerding out about this other legacy Square franchise that I feel like its systems are really coming back. Like a lot of games seem to be kind of paying homage to the Saga games, plus all the remasters and ports coming out. Good to see this coming back and Mana coming back, so.
Yeah, it's a good time, despite all the like drama with, you know, the executives changing and their comments on NFTs or whatever. They're still putting out interesting stuff, even if they don't do a great job promoting all of it.
Yeah, for sure. But speaking of promotion, where can people find you on the internet, Lucas? What do you have going on? Feel free to promote yourself right now and everything you got cooking.
Cool. If you want to follow me on social, I'm HokutoNoLucas. A lot of my writing right now is for Shack News. You can go over there right now. You can check out the Saga review, you can check out the interview. I've been super busy with other stuff. I got Rising Tide impressions up, and I'm about to have another review up for Class of Heroes, which is another weird RPG that
Dungeon Crawler plays. Baby.
Yeah, love those first-person DRPGs. Go over to Shack News, and my name's all over the homepage right now, so just click on that and read, and I would love it to, you know, see those numbers go up for me.
Yeah. Is the Class of Heroes collection, is that getting a physical release? I remember I got when Gaijin Works did a, like, back before crowdfunding was a thing, like, you could pre-order like directly from their website Class of Heroes 2, I want to say, on PSP. And I still have it sealed in its Class of Heroes themed box.
I bet that's worth everything. Some dollars.
maybe haven't looked, but yeah, it's those are fun games.
Definitely.
It's a fun series, but yes, thank you again, Lucas. Always great to talk to you. And of course, thank you to each and every one of you who has listened today. Be sure to rate and review us on your preferred podcast service, as I'd really appreciate it. If you have an RPG you would like us to feature on an episode, tweet at @_RPGUniversity with the hashtag RPGU with your suggestion. Or you can share your own favorite RPGs and memories directly with me on Twitter @ProfessorRPG. As always, everybody, stay safe, stay healthy, be kind to one another. Class dismissed.